My next guest is Lwando Glasor. She is a constitutional lawyer, and she is a contributor to the Daily Maverick most often. She has a wonderful piece about what happened in America on Capitol Hill on the Daily Maverick at the moment, and she has collected some of many of the columns that she's written for Daily Maverick and other places, and she's also put onto the page for the first time some of her previously unpublished stuff in a book called Made in South Africa, A Black Woman's Stories of Rage, Resistance and Progress. Lwando, good afternoon, and thank you very much for your time.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me, and thank you for that introduction. I really appreciate it.
I hate this because I've got about 10 minutes with you, and as far as I'm concerned, every single one of these essays, I would like to talk to you for an hour about each and one of these essays, because sometimes I would want further explanation, elucidation. Sometimes we'll say, well, I'm not so sure about that argument. Help me come a little closer to it. And we can't do that. But do you mind if I sort of duck that issue for a while and just ask you to what I thought was some very interesting thoughts about Capitol Hill and what happened yesterday, and let's not have too much schadenfreude here in South Africa about what's happening in the U.S.?
Yeah. I mean, in the book, I do talk about having studied in the U.S. and I did constitutional theory and got, you know, introduced to the American sort of constitutional law system. And as a South African, you know, I realized that in so many things we are ahead in terms of conversation, in terms of discourse, and in terms of being progressive and giving each other space to be, you know, fully human within a very diverse society and trying to actually make room for as many people as possible. And I found that in the U.S., a lot of people, especially minorities, have to fight so much in a manner that I wasn't accustomed to. There is a lot of fighting in South Africa for your space, for your rights, you know, for resources. But in the U.S., it felt like the conversation really starts from the ground level in a way that in South Africa's context, it doesn't, because we have a constitution that has settled a lot of things like abortion, like affirmative action, you know, like so many, you know, controversial things like gay marriage. You know, the Constitutional Court has been decisive on that. So for me, as someone who studied constitutional law here and not having spent much time debating people's right to get married or right to have an abortion or affirmative action, it was quite an education going into a system that we are told is so progressive, that these people are the pioneers of constitutionalism. And you're like, wow, we just spent a whole hour, well, more than an hour discussing affirmative action in a way that I didn't really think was helpful, and in a way that made me feel unwanted in that space, you know, because I could tell that a lot of the intellectual sort of points that were made disguised a lot of prejudice and a lot of narrow-mindedness. So it was very difficult, but I was also grateful to have that education because I think it allowed me to think of things that I take for granted as settled. Should the right of abortion be a constitutional right? You know, what is the reason for affirmative action in the U.S.? It's about diversity, but here it's really about making right the wrongs of the past and ensuring a level playing field from here on, you know. So it just made me go back to the origins, you know, of those ideas, because that's where they are. They're still talking about, you know, very basic things.
Yeah.
So yesterday, I mean,
Okay, no, continue.
No, I'm going to say, yesterday, a lot of people, not yesterday, 2 days ago, I got a lot of messages saying, you must be watching this because I do keep up with American news, but with a bit of, you know, sarcasm and cynicism. And I'm kind of like, yeah, not surprising. But at the same time, this doesn't really pose a threat to America in a real sense. Whereas in South Africa, we're still relatively a new country. And for instance, with the Zuma presidency, that cost us way more than 4 years of Donald Trump has cost America, right? You know, it's kind of like a bratty behavior from these people, but quite dangerous. But at the end of the day, they have a big army. They have systems of government that I'm sure are going to kick in and save the day. And that rebellion is going to be suppressed. But it was clarifying for a lot of people because it was a display of white supremacy and what happens when white supremacists don't get what they want and they feel like they're entitled to it, right?
And then I mean, just to go to a couple of the essays, and as I say, I'd love to talk about all of them. The book is subtitled A Black Woman's Stories of Rage, Resistance and Progress. And the book is divided into three sections, essays which deal sort of broadly with rage and then resistance and then progress. And in Rage Against the Machine, which was published in October of 2016, you say, some that say that rage is not a useful emotion. I beg to differ. Talk to me about rage in your life.
Yeah, and if we compare it to what happened in the U.S., is that that rage for me was not useful, what we saw. I don't think those people have any intention of transforming it into anything creative and progressive and constructive. And I think for me, the rage, being a black woman, is something that I, it's a label that I carry sometimes, especially being an opinionated black woman, you know, the angry black woman. And at first, I didn't like that stereotype. And then I came to embrace it as part of my personality that is there, and a part of my personality that is protective of me and my community, in that I think rage really comes from a source of compassion. When you're really a feeling human being, when you see injustice, when you experience injustice, it's a natural thing to be angry. And I wish people would embrace that. But I think you can't stay there too long. I think rage tells you that there is something wrong here, but it doesn't necessarily tell you what to do. And while you are enraged, it does kind of cut off the part of your brain where you can find creativity and solutions and that kind of thing. But it was just saying that, you know, rage against the machine, yes. Be angry, as we saw with Seasonless Fall when I wrote it at the time. But it needs to be transformed into something useful. And this country was built on that. It was built from a lot of anger, channeled into energy that was used to build a new country and to create a new vision. So I think that is my relationship to anger. Most days I'm more angry than not. And then other days I've moved on to the part where I'm trying to figure out, okay, we can't be chronically angry. What are we going to do about this?
I think quite often about race, and I've been thinking about it more than usual at the moment, and that's primarily because I've been watching Emmanuel Acho's conversations, difficult conversations with a black man on YouTube.
On Instagram.
Yeah. I have his book in the studio with me, and I'll be reviewing that in my normal book slot in half an hour's time. And that made me spend a lot of time thinking about your essay, Racism and Semantic Satiation, around the Penny Sparrow time. And you're not the only black commentator who has said at times, I've got nothing more to say about racism. For goodness sake, how many more times do I have to say these things?
Yeah, you know, and, you know, after my sort of, I'm no longer a practicing lawyer, but very much identify as a constitutional lawyer because I care about constitutionalism. And I started a consultancy called Including Society, and I help people with creating anti-fragile spaces, racially anti-fragile spaces. Because my theory is I am never going to cover every microaggression there is. People want the intellectual stuff. They want to know what microaggressions are, what racism is, what white privilege is versus white supremacy and all those things. We can get, you know, the definitions of those things, but there's a lot of hard work. You know, I work a lot with Albie Sachs, and he told me something that I never forgot. As I was trying to figure out for my consultancy what transformation is, I asked him, and he's like, Rwanda, a revolution is changing the regime. We've done that. But transformation is changing the heart of our country. And I feel like we haven't done that, right? And I think that's what my consultancy is about, that I don't have more to say on race that is not available at your fingertips. Emmanuel's book, so many clips that you can watch, educational things you can watch on Instagram, YouTube, on Google, and so many things, so many available resources, that I don't think my time is best spent by defining what microaggressions are, because I will never get to all of them. So it's about creating spaces where racist incidents can occur, but how can we not fall apart from those things? How can we move forward together, that even when people make mistakes, that they don't lose their seat in the community? And also, how do people make amends once that has happened? How do you repair and restore relationships? And I think that's what I'm interested in, because I think being too intelligent sometimes can cut off the pathway to the heart. And I think we've stopped feeling and we've intellectualized a lot. And I'm not saying that that is not worth it. I think people should do that all the time, educate themselves, but don't ignore, you know, your body, we work a lot with the body and how it feels, especially in a racially hostile situation, and also how it feels when you make a racially insensitive comment, and how you can build community with people knowing that none of us are perfect. I'm a Black person, and I'm around other Black people who say very homophobic things, and sometimes by error and sometimes deliberately. You know, how can we build community and move forward together and not, you know, deny what we have said and what we have done, own up to it and try and restore relationships and build relationships. So when I'm tired of racism, it's because I feel like I've said everything I need to say about it. I want to get to the part where we try and create this world that we're all dreaming of.
A couple of the essays, quite a few of the essays are quite brave. I mean, the way you write about being called a coconut and the way you're assailed from both white people and Black people for sounding the way that you do and making some of the life choices that you have made, that I think is quite a brave essay to write, and particularly the one where you write and you do say that you had some internal doubt as to whether this should be published, that you like singing the verse of Die Stem as part of our national anthem.
Yeah. I do, and I think that I know it's an unpopular opinion. I know my Blackness or my credentials, you know, of being what the kids call woke will be questioned, but there is something about what we have done with the national anthem that every time I sing it, it takes me to a place where I never was, where those decisions were made, and trying to figure out why, you know, the stem is part of our national anthem, and realizing it was an effort of what I said earlier of building a community and making sure that people feel like they're a part of it and that we can keep certain things from our past as a reminder, because if we forget, that's when we're going to make the same mistakes again. So every time I sing the stem, it's like, oh, there was apartheid here. I can never forget that because...
But you don't need the stem to remind you of that, do you, Luanda?
You don't, but there's something about... I really care about ancestry. I really care about what came before me. I really care about wisdom that maybe I would not have made the exact same decision, but I understand the difficulty of the early 90s and that we did not win a war, that the government also didn't win against the people. And part of the compromise is let's put these two opposing things together. And I like living in a constitutional democracy where not everyone feels the same way about it. I very much understand people oppose it. And if I was told tomorrow that it's no longer part of the anthem, I can live with that. But I think the journey that we're traveling as a constitutional democracy, trying to figure out a spectrum between what Germany has done and what America has not done, and what we're trying to do when it comes to memory, when it comes to reconciliation, when it comes to, you know, creating one people out of fragments, there's something romantic about that. But I know to other people, it's not romantic. I know that there were contexts in which that anthem was sang and it really reminded them of their, you know, that they are not citizens of South Africa at the time, and to live with that. And in the piece, I compare what we've done with the anthem with what we have done with Constitutional Hill. We didn't have to build our highest court that is meant to be the guardian of our constitution on a former prison and a war site, you know, a war that actually led to what was the Union of South Africa. A lot of those prisoners didn't want that. Some of the Black prisoners who came back and were consulted about the decision, they're like, leave that place as it is. We don't need to transform it into the home of the Constitutional Court. But to me, there's something about a lesson of using a past that is so toxic and so brutal and turning it into something that we can use to move forward with and to learn lessons from. So I think that's where I come from. But I'm not really, you know, stuck or married, you know, to that decision that was taken, but I completely understand it. And there's something about the grace of that decision that I really expect, because I think love is much more harder than fear.
Luanda, thank you very, very much. I really do urge people to get hold of this and just read through it and go through the process that I went through of delight and, wow, anxiety and being intellectually and emotionally challenged by them. I think it's a really, 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 really impressive collection of writing. Luanda Klaso, she has put together Made in South Africa, A Black Woman's Stories of Rage, Resistance and Progress.